Greetings from BBS Radio, where truth and news still exist in the original form. You're tuned in to The Spiritual Politician, the show that shows you where politics, government, and all that nasty selfishness went really wrong, and how you can take action to make it right. I'm Melinda Pillsbury Foster, your host for this hour of insight, aimed at making each of us much more responsible, much more cooperative, and much more aware of the spiritual bonds that connect us to each other, no matter what we find to squabble over in the interim. You can call us toll-free from the U.S. to 877-876-5227. You can call from Canada to 888-810-8322. Or you can call direct to 530-876-3222. This show is carried online, and you may also be able to get it on the air in your local area. To find out if one of those old-fashioned on-the-air stations in your area carries this show, just contact us at bbsradio.com. The website for the show can be found on the BBS Radio site. All past shows become available as soon as it is humanly or even extra-humanly possible on the station archives. And I do my own blog, and that's titled How the Neocons Stole Freedom, and it's located at howtheneoconsstolefreedom.blogspot.com. But today I'm going to read you a short article I wrote this week that I didn't put up on my blog. And that's about the threat of the Bush meltdown now happening. Sometimes a rumor is so frightening that we hope that no matter how tantalizing, it's not true. The following item appears in several locations around the internet. Maybe it's true and maybe it's not, but in any case, it is extremely disturbing. And that is March 13th, 2007. Our White House press corps sources report further disturbing news about President George W. Bush. Our sources have witnessed a clearly inebriated Bush approaching members of the press corps and making rude comments, including one particularly crude comment about First Lady Laura Bush. In that case, Bush, nodding toward Laura, called her a C-U-N-T. While Bush's drinking is no secret in the White House press contingent, that particular comment was reportedly the worst they have heard uttered by Bush. Our sources also report that Laura Bush's stays at the White House are less frequent and that her overnight trips to the Mayflower Hotel often coincide with the president's drunken binges. Well, that is more than just a little bit disturbing. But that seems to be the direction that this White House is taking. Frightening. And especially in consideration of the fact that, as we all watch with horror, it would seem that this White House is also on a collision course with the Constitution in denying the right of the Congress to subpoena people within the administration. If you're following that particular action, you know exactly what I mean. And now, other updates from the week just passed. The battle of the Bush Library has several different fronts. This week, one of those fronts took on more weight with the threat of subpoenas delivered to officials at Baylor University in Waco that litigant and attorney Gary Vodica says will prove that the library committee has engaged in long-term deceit on the intended location of the library. Vodica maintains that no other location besides SMU has ever been under consideration. SMU is conveniently located just blocks from the homes that Bush and Cheney are both now building. The area is known as the Bubble, the Beverly Hills of Texas. It is also walking distance to the Dallas Country Club. To make way for construction, many say that SMU has abused eminent domain and ejected elderly longtime residents from their homes in ways that amount to racketeering. The lawsuit filed by Mr. Bodica may throw light on these matters and cause other lawsuits and investigations to begin. So keep your eyes peeled for more developments deep in the heart of Dallas. And now our thoughts for the week ahead. Although you will not hear this from official sources, America is now undergoing a meltdown of another kind caused in part by Bush and company. The housing bubble has popped. More Americans were late with mortgage payments than ever before in the last quarter. Foreclosures are at an all-time high. The price of houses is plummeting as the cash flow economy comes to its logical conclusion. It's time for all of us to reassess, rethink, and use this as an opportunity to understand ourselves and take new direction. In the coming months, more and more Americans will be strapped financially and looking at what seems to be a chasm gaping at their feet. How do you pay the electric bill? How do you feed your family and survive? How did Americans do that before there was an electric grid with a switch a corporation could turn off for non-payment? How did it feel to live in a world where you knew you could take care of yourself, where there was no corporation to which you had to pay money for essential survival? Those are the questions we need to answer. And there are answers, thank goodness. Today, many Americans still live off the grid. The Amish never climbed on the grid, and others have found the exit. Along with those alternative technologies now close to being ready for the market that allow us to use electric appliances off-grid, Americans also have a long and honorable history of building, doing, and making it work. Each of these practices connected those people now gone with a sense of real independence and self-reliance that brought more than just convenience. Along with that came a vision of themselves and the world that said, I can handle it. It was that understanding, internal and eternal, that made so much possible for previous generations. Those are values we really need today. As individuals, in our families, in our communities, and in our churches, we need to reconnect with the only real grid, the one that makes us one in the spirit. Discovering American wisdom is something we'll be talking about here in the weeks to come, so stay tuned. Now, our guest tonight is Linda Honeycutt. Linda is also known as the Granny Warrior, and her war chariot is an RV that Linda takes across America to talk to ordinary Americans about what's wrong with our world today and what they can do to make it right. Linda was a grandmother before the oppressive truth of what government has become exploded in her life. That moment was when officers appeared at her door to take away someone she loved and had cared for all of his life, a monkey named Buddy. As mothers and grandmothers, we will do anything to ensure the well-being of those we love. For Linda, that mission has sent her thousands of miles to meet people who she otherwise would never have known existed. Today we'll hear about her life and her mission as the Granny Warrior. Please welcome Linda Honeycutt. Linda, are you there?
I sure am.
Well, that's yours is quite a story. So why don't we begin by you telling us something about Linda Honeycutt and who you are when you're not being the Granny Warrior.
Well, I'm the same thing all the time. I mean, it's one and the same. I don't change. I don't put on a cape and run out in the world and say, here comes the grannies.
Well, but you're married. You have a son. You have grandkids.
Yeah. I have 5 grandchildren, 1 great-grandchild. One son and 1 husband and 1 monkey.
And you still have Buddy.
Oh, yes.
And I think you're really holding Buddy right now, aren't you?
No, my husband just took him into the living room so he would shut up.
But he's been a big part of your life, and you were involved with exotic animals earlier.
Oh, yeah, all my life.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about that? That's a different kind of thing for most people.
Well, I don't even know how it got started, but I always have had an affinity for animals, and we've always had animals. And somehow or another, I wound up with a monkey. And it just kind of grows on you, you know. And then somebody says, oh, you've got that monkey. I know somebody's got a monkey they want to get rid of. Would you take it? Well, sure. So we wound up with a sanctuary in Florida for years.
Uh-huh.
We had all kinds of birds. We had Cotamundis, kinkajous, reptiles, snakes, oh, my Lord, we had everything. We had a couple of cougars. Everything you think of came through our place anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the way we lived. We took care of the animals and grew our food, lived every day, just minded our own business.
Mm-hmm. And that was a lot of fun. You enjoyed it. You were happy.
Of course I was. But then my husband got sick and he ultimately died, and then I had to change everything had to change then, you know. Your whole life changes when your partner dies. So I got rid of the sanctuary. I gave all the animals away and just started driving around and enjoying myself and growing up, you know. I was 45 years old and just starting to grow up. I'd never really seen a whole lot or done a whole lot that I thought about being different.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess it was from other people, but yeah, it was normal for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's always what we look at. It's what's normal for us. And your son was raised by then, and he was off on his own.
Oh, yeah. He was grown and gone.
So you had time to really think about yourself.
Yes, I did. And I spent about a year and a half just traveling around, just having fun, you know, just relaxing more than anything else. And then I had to go back. You know, you have to stop sometime.
That's right.
You just can't keep on going. So I went back to Florida and got a job and met my husband now.
And soon after that, you got Buddy, right?
Oh, yeah. We've been married 17 years and Buddy's 12.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a while before Buddy. But we had another monkey, too. Jim had a monkey named Jack with a little Cameron that he just dearly loved.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, Jack was in the National Enquirer with him, I guess in 1992, something like that, for picking the lucky lottery numbers.
Oh, how funny. So, but animals were a part of your life.
Always
and you certainly knew how to take care of them because you'd had a sanctuary.
Right.
And so what happened when they showed up at your front door? Did you have any inkling that was going to happen?
One of those gut feelings you get, I knew it would happen sooner or later because a lot of people have turned us in. And it's just a way to get at us, you know. When you try to hurt somebody, you always do it through something they love, so that's the way they do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of had a feeling it would happen, yeah. But I wasn't expecting it right at that moment.
So tell us what happened.
Well, the USDA came up and they brought the SWAT team with them.
A SWAT team for a monkey.
Yeah, well, for a dangerous old lady. Remember, I'm the granny warrior.
I see.
And they had seen, evidently online. In fact, they had printed out every page of my website. Every page they had printed out and had it all in their little folder. And about all the protests we'd done and everything. So
mm-hmm.
I imagine they probably had good reason to think I'd be obnoxious. And I proved I was. You know, they wanted to come in, and I told them no. And they said they needed to come inside. I said, well, tough, you know. And they kept insisting and insisting, so I kept insisting for a warrant or a search warrant, anything. And finally, I had a gun, and I'd leaned it up against the door jamb. And the one policeman asked me, he said, what's that gun for? I said, well, it's to protect myself. If anybody comes across my door, I feel in fear of my life, and I'm fearing for my monkey's life. I'll have to shoot in self-defense. But I never touched the gun. I never made any move to, you know, threaten them with it, just tell them what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And the one man kind of smirked, and he backed off, and he told the one cop, he said, you know, he said, this is ridiculous. And they went back and leaned against the car and left the OCA inspector standing here, you know, and she kept telling me I had to do this and I had to do that and I had to bring the monkey out. And I said, I don't have to do anything. You know, until this world is until America is not free, I don't have to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a free person. I have rights. I have a constitution that protects me against your intrusion into my life.
And what did they say to that? What was their reaction?
Kind of like dummified, like, duh. And then I went and got, I had a whole stack of the Aaron Russo tapes, you know, the DVDs, Freedom Fascist.
Mm-hmm.
And the one lieutenant, the local sheriff's department, she was very nice, by the way. I asked her, I said, have you ever seen this? And she said, no. I said, would you take it home and look at it? She said, I certainly will. She said, how many of you got it? I said, I got enough for all of you. So I gave all the cops all, you know, the tapes and stuff. And we had a little discussion about freedoms and my rights and the 14th Amendment and the Second Amendment. And I handed them, every one of them, I handed them a copy of the Constitution and a copy of the Bill of Rights.
Uh-huh.
And I asked him, I said, now which one of you guys thinks that you can come into this house and take my monkey and not break one of those rules?
What'd they say?
They were left.
They just left, huh?
Yep.
And that was the last of it, the last you heard of them?
That was the last of it. I called up the USDA the next day, and I talked to the Dr. Madges, who is the head of the APHIS department here in North Carolina. And she and I had a long discussion, and she finally decided that I don't need a permit. I'm not exhibiting. I wasn't going to get a permit anyway. I'm not going to give them a reason to come into my life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, without a permit, they have no right to be on my property.
So after that, you didn't have a problem with them, but you had been galvanized into further activity.
Oh, a lot of activity, yeah.
And that is that when you actually got the name, the Granny Warrior?
Oh, Lord, no. We had that long before then.
How did you get the name?
Over the same thing, the monkeys. The PETA had bills written in Washington. It was a 1329 bill, which would ban the ownership of primates.
Mm-hmm.
That's nationally, not just statewide, but through the country.
Mm-hmm.
And when I found out about that, I told my girlfriend in Texas, I said, did you read this? And she got upset as much as I was. So we decided, well, we can't do this, and nobody's doing anything, and we'll just do it ourselves. So we put on our Sunday dresses and our stockings, and we went up to Washington, and we talked to the committee, the fisheries committee. By the
mm-hmm.
way, that's where I met Ron Paul.
Mm-hmm.
And we presented an argument to the fisheries committee and presented them with a whole booklet that we put together, information on all the lies that were told to them by the animal activists, you know, like the number of deaths and the number of bites and all that stuff. We used their same information, except we finished it out. We showed the whole thing, didn't just take little inserts out. And by the time we got through, they shelved the bill.
Well, you were successful then.
Yes, we were, but two old ladies had no clue that everybody, you know, we thought that was just normal. Everybody could do that. We didn't know how hard it actually is.
Mm-hmm.
So we just happened to luck out on something and a group of the congressmen that were actually interested in listening to what we had to say.
Mm-hmm. So that sort of set your present trajectory, because you decided that you were going to go out and talk to ordinary Americans too.
Right. Well, after that, we picketed PETA. We decided, well, we're big shots now. We can do anything. We've gone to Washington, you know.
That's right.
And, so we decided, well, we'll just ticket PETA. So I went online, and we got all these people signed up. They were going to meet us in the Virginia, and Karen and I drove all the way up there, and we set up all our picket signs, and right in front of PETA's doorstep. And we kept waiting for people to come, and nobody came. It was just me and Karen.
So what did you do? I mean, obviously
we stayed there, and we picketed them. I was in to call the TV stations, and the TV station came out, and they thought it was funny, you know, it was two old ladies defying PETA, and PETA wouldn't even come out and talk to them.
No, they were hiding inside, right?
They did. They never came out. They finally did send a notice out, a little printed note to the reporter that said, even people that abuse animals have a right to picket.
Uh-huh.
But they never came out and showed their face, and the one TV camera guy there, he said, well, you guys are the granny warriors. You're really on the warpath, and it just stuck.
Mm-hmm. So you started a group, and you have an online site.
Right.
That's the Granny Warriors.
Yeah, we have grannywarriors.com.
And you have, people could join the Granny Warriors,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah, you can become a granny.
Yeah, that's right. You could just become a granny.
That's right, but you have to be up and at them.
Mm-hmm. You have to get up, and you have to go do it.
Yeah. Actually, no, we do it for you. You know, there's so many people that would really love to go out and do what we do, but they're just so tied down. I mean, they're stuck at home. They have to work. They have to pay the bill.
Mm-hmm.
I'm lucky. I married a younger man, and he's all for it, and he stays home and works and pays my way.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a deal.
I know. Well, I'm the warrior granny. I can hurt him.
That's right. And your chariot of
my war wagon.
Of protest, your war wagon is an RV.
Right.
And just right now, you're repainting it next campaign, right?
My arms are wore out. I've sanded and ground and sanded and, oh, my Lord. Pressure washed it. And believe me, when I put that paint on there, I never knew it would be that hard to get off.
Mm-hmm. But now you're repainting it. You're repainting
it
with...
Oh, yeah. It's going to be all new. It's going to be a brand new war wagon.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell us about some of the places you've gone on your campaigns.
Well...
You've been to Texas. You've traced the course of the Trans-Texas Corridor.
Oh, we followed that whole... all the way up to Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
Drove all the way up there. For one thing, I had heard stories about it for the last several months or a year, you know, and I really couldn't believe, I just couldn't believe this is that stupid. I can't believe anybody would be that stupid. And I told Karen, I said, all right, when we leave Texas, we're going up I-35 and just see for ourselves. Well, we got on I-35, and it's true. They're working hard as they can work. They've got bulldozers and all the road equipment out, and no Americans.
Yeah, and some people may not be aware that there is a huge, vast, wide corridor going all the way up the United States, and it's supposed to end near Indianapolis.
It's supposed to end, Kansas City's supposed to be the first stop.
Uh-huh.
And that's where they're going to inspect the cargo and stuff. But what they're not telling you is that Kansas City, the port of Kansas City that they're doing, is not going to be an American port.
Mm-hmm.
That's owned by, I think it's Centro,
mm-hmm.
or Cinco, and there will
so
be...
So
it
will be deep within the United States.
Right, and
so
there will be no Americans working there. All the longshoremen and, oh my Lord, all the baggage handlers, all that, they're out of business. All Mexicans.
That's rather amazing.
It is.
And people don't even know it. It's amazing. No. When you get away from where the corridor is actually going in, nobody has heard about it.
Well, I read somewhere, I think the other day, that there was going to be over 1.5 million acres taken to build this road by eminent domain.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you think of all those people that are losing their homesteads, you know, just to have a highway for Mexicans to come up here, give them open shot at us. I mean, my Lord, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Well, yes, and you talk about securing the borders, and then you allow that. It isn't like they can't get off the freeway. They do.
Well, think about it another way. The Mexican trucks can carry any amount of load they want. There's no limit. You know, they have no regulations down there. They don't have to have an American driver's license. They don't have to stop every 10 hours and sleep. There are no rules. There's nothing governing these Mexican drivers.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be driving on these highways, period. Now, April 1st has already opened up. The Mexican drivers can drive anywhere in the United States, starting April 1st.
Amazing.
Yeah. Now, what's going to happen to our truckers?
That's true. And they must be frightened. And you have truckers who have befriended you and that help you when you're on the road.
Oh, they have granny watch all the time. They'll get behind me and somebody will start and say, I see the granny. And then, of course, we go slower than they do.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll pass and they'll say, all right, I'm getting out of sight now. And then somebody, I got her, I caught her, I got her in the rear view, you know, and all this stuff. And it's heartwarming.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these guys go out of their way to make sure we're safe.
And they're very, very appreciative of the fact that what you're doing is helping them, too.
Well, they're also appreciative of the fact that I make a good pot of coffee when we stop at the rest stop.
And so you also share.
Oh, yeah. I always have something. Now, you know yourself, a granny always has some sweet rolls or a donut or something.
That's right. Absolutely.
So you got to live up to your image.
That's absolutely true. And so you went on from the issues related to the government trying to take animals away from us and our ability to, you know, in many ways live off the grid that way.
Well, you know, when Karen and I started out, it was mainly just to save. We were concerned about ourselves more than anything else. And, I mean, that was very selfish, and we neither one even thought about anything else until we started meeting other people.
Mm-hmm.
And hearing other stories. And from one thing you go to another, like, all right, we were fighting against the animal activists. And then, but that leads into the USDA with their NAIS program, the National Animal ID Program.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to put farmers out of business, and they're just not making any bones about it. They're going to microchip these animals, and the farmers are going to have to register them. They have to register their premise. They have to tell the government when they kill a chicken or if a chicken dies. If you have a chicken for dinner, you better call the government and tell them you're eating that chicken, because if they catch you not reporting it, it's $1,000 a day fine. And how is a little farmer going to handle that?
Well, yes, and what they're trying to move us toward is big agriculture, and this is a way to subsidize big agriculture.
That's it. The big factory farms don't have to. They don't have to chip all their animals. They get one premise number and one ID number, which covers all of their cattle at the time.
And most Americans just have no idea that this is going on. When you think about how that's going to increase our costs for eating,
it's
frightening.
It's not only increasing our costs for what we eat. We're paying to have rotten food given to us to eat.
That's true.
I mean, these factory farms are terrible. The animals are treated. If the animal activists wanted to do something, they would shut them down.
Mm-hmm.
They would shut the feedlots down. They wouldn't mess with the individual. Just take care of the business, the corporations, and they would be doing something worthwhile then.
Now, have you ever talked to somebody from PETA and tried to explain to them what's going on here and what these places are like?
Of course.
And what happens?
They don't care. These people are absolutely brainwashed. People are not supposed to have animals. They have agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And their plan's working. If you remember, it wasn't long ago, you didn't hear about spay and neuter. Now you hear it every day. Spay
mm-hmm.
and neuter, spay and neuter, spay and neuter. Well, if you spay and neuter every animal that you have, eventually there won't be any animals because none of them will be able to breed, which is exactly what they want.
Well, actually, there are always going to be people who do it professionally, and then theirs will breed.
No, not according to PETA.
Really?
Really.
That's so the point is that people shouldn't have any animals.
Exactly. Animals have the same rights as you do. Did you know that?
Well, no.
Well, they do.
I still don't know it. I heard you say it, but that doesn't mean I know it.
Well, that's what PETA says. They have the same rights that you do.
Well, people can say anything. I could say the world's flat. It doesn't make the world flat.
I know.
There's an objective physical reality to the world.
That's what we keep trying to tell PETA, but they don't listen. So, but actually, PETA's not a big problem anymore because if all these other programs go through, you're not going to be able to afford a pet anyway. You wouldn't be able to feed them.
Mm-hmm.
So why worry with that? Let's stop it at the top.
Yeah, so what's actually going on here, though, is each one of these things is a tightening down to assert control over Americans in every arena of their lives.
Well, they have already. I mean, when you think about it, you have to pay to drive your car. You have to buy a license, right?
Oh, absolutely.
You have to have insurance, right?
Mm-hmm. And you have to do all of these things, and if you take a look at what the government does in return, all it does is offer you more control. It doesn't
exactly.
offer you anything else.
Right.
It doesn't make you safer for
yes.
anything that they do.
You have to wear a seatbelt. You have to wear a head helmet. You have to wear knee pads if you ride your bike. You have to do this. You can't smoke here. You can't do this there. Everything is just coming to the point where you better have a playbook to tell you where you are and what you're doing and what you can and cannot do, because you're going to get in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just beyond reason.
And the Texas corridor, of course, is very troubling because they will be taking so much land. And also, there are pipelines that run along the Texas corridor.
It's going to run right through the middle, yeah.
Yes, and in terms of what impact that has on Americans, we don't necessarily think about it, but those things are very vulnerable to breakage.
Yep.
And when a pipeline breaks, it causes tremendous toxicity in the soil for a long ways around.
And look at the workers that are installing these pipelines. You won't see an American face there.
No.
So you know that they're not going by the American guidelines and their standards of building.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah, you know. So it's, even though, do you know what companies have actually gotten the contracts to do that?
I haven't read, I did read it somewhere, and I can't remember which countries it was, but it's a country out of Spain. I mean, a corporation out of Spain doing the actual building.
So it's not even an American company?
No, the Americans don't own that road. They've already sold it out.
So they took the land by eminent domain and then transferred the land to foreign interests.
Well, the good part is they haven't taken the land yet.
Yes, and I know, and
yeah.
all over Texas,
yeah.
there are protests going on this issue. This is
right.
a huge issue in Texas, even though when you go across the country, most other people haven't heard about it.
90% of the people have no idea what it is.
And why do you think that is? That all over America, this is happening. It's going to impact everybody, but nobody's heard about it.
Well, have you heard anything on Fox News or CBS or NBC or MSNBC?
No, certainly
not. And you
not.
Won't. They just don't report it because that's not in their best interest. They're owned by the government.
That's right. And this, of course, goes to the issue of the fact of who owns the media.
Yeah.
Because America doesn't even own its own media anymore, and we're not getting information on a lot of things we should have had information about.
If people knew, they would have an uprising.
Mm-hmm. One hopes.
Well, I would hope so. I would think that America still has some balls.
Yes, if they those haven't been sold off without their knowledge either.
Well, they probably have, but you can always take them back.
That's right, and people have to take back
yeah.
the intestinal fortitude to handle these things themselves. And to make sure that their rights, you know, remain under their control.
Exactly.
And now let's go into, I mean, here we are, we're being cut off in so many different ways, but you're a person who actually has a fairly unusual background, and I talked about this a little bit in my opening remarks. You've actually lived off the grid.
Yes, I did.
Tell us about that.
Well, there's not really much to tell. We lived in the Everglades. We had a little garden. I did have a TV because we had a Jeep, and it was a battery-operated TV. So when we want to watch TV, we just pull the Jeep up to the window, run a cord through, and plugged it into the battery, and we could watch the news or whatever we wanted to watch.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we weren't suffering by any means. We had a gas stove. We had a gas refrigerator. In fact, Cervell still makes them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just easy. It was just normal to us. There
mm-hmm.
was no problem. I mean, we had plenty of lights. We had, kerosene lights.
Mm-hmm.
Very friendly, very romantic, you know. And our water supply, we had, it sounds silly, but we put 55-gallon drums on the roof. Of course, in Florida, you know, the sun's out most of the time. And one was painted black, one was painted white. The black one gave us piping hot water, the white one gave us cold water.
So it was that simple?
It was that simple.
And you had actually grown up in a farm that had been off the grid.
Well, when I grew up, there was no grid to get on. Think about it. We didn't have electricity until I was probably 8 years old. I mean, there was no electric power in the county.
Not in the whole county.
No.
Amazing.
Not amazing. It's just that was the way it was then.
But so few Americans now really, you know, seem to remember what it was like to live off the grid. I mean, they look at that and they think that's incredibly primitive, and that sort of thing probably wasn't happening even at the turn of the 20th century. But, of course, it was, and we simply don't remember it. It's one of those things that simply isn't studied, isn't remembered.
Well, I can remember going to town, and now my cousins had electricity.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them even had a TV, one of those little round screen TVs, and they were so proud of that thing, they turned it on, all you could see was snow. You know, I thought, what's the point?
You know? Well, yeah, one would wonder at that point what the point was, yes.
Well, there was no TV stations around, so I don't know why they had a TV.
Well, maybe just in case eventually that there would be.
Well, I think it was status. They were the rich part of the family.
I see.
They had a Chevy.
They had a Chevy.
Yeah. An Impala.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
And you grew up in North Carolina.
Right.
And you grew up in a time when America was very much in a transition. So it was before, you were born before World War II.
Right.
And so you witnessed all of these changes. And having witnessed those changes, of course, you have a different attitude because being off the grid isn't something that's just astonishing to you. It's just something that you take as a matter of course. But you can get off the grid if you need to.
Oh, I'd never starve. My family would never starve.
Mm-hmm.
We would never do without, really.
So having had that attitude and seen the world from that perspective, what does it seem like to you with people who, you know, that they're terrified if they were off the grid they would die? Does that seem strange?
No, it doesn't. I've met so many people now, and they're so accustomed to just pushing a button and microwaving their dinner, you know, flipping a switch and you've got light. They have no conception of what makes it work. It's just there.
Mm-hmm.
They don't think about what happens to make that light, you know, or how they could have an alternative source. You know, what if this didn't work? Well, maybe I could do this. They don't think that way anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The kids don't even think that way. When you see kids, like when we were kids, my grandmother would have an oatmeal box or something. And, of course, we got the box. We can make all kinds of things. We could make telephones with a tin can.
Mm-hmm.
And a piece of string in a tin can, you could talk. You know, of course, you could hear yourself without the tin can, too, but it was just the idea.
Yes, well, you started to understand the principles, not in an abstract way, but in a way that enabled you to apply the principles.
Right, but we didn't have all the video games and the TV and the entertainment sections, you know. We didn't have all the toys that they have now.
Mm-hmm.
Our minds had to work.
Right,
our fun.
But one of the things that's actually happened that most people, I think, may overlook and not think about is that for many kids, way back in the 40s and the 50s, there were these marvelous toys. They were little science kits you could get. And that was one of the ways that kids of that generation connected with actually being able to do things.
Right.
And then those evaporated, too, and they're not there.
Well, they're dangerous.
Right.
You might get hurt.
Which goes back to the same issue, really, that you encountered with the feds at your door. It's they were going to make the world safe for you by removing everything that enabled you to understand the world.
Yep.
And to handle the world on your own. So a huge disconnect was created.
We have to understand, too, people that understand and know are dangerous.
That's true.
I mean, they could really cause some problems.
Mm-hmm. And when people are on the grid and they don't have the information of how to get on the grid or get off the grid and they don't have the means, then, of course, what happens is they're dependent on the grid, and no matter what happens, they can stay serfs on the plantation.
That's right. There's no freedom.
That's right. And there's no access to freedom.
Well, until the schools start teaching kids how to think instead of keeping them from thinking, we're going to have the same problem.
Mm-hmm.
And to do that, you're going to have to find new teachers that know how to teach. mm-hmm. that know what they're talking about, not just sit there and read out of a book.
Yes. How does it feel when you take a look at the world as it is today and think about just how different it was when you were growing up?
I feel very, very sad. Absolutely. It's just debilitating to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
When you see a little kid in his new shoes, you know, his $100 Nikes and his little toys that must have cost $30, $40 just to keep him entertained, and he's whining and crying. He's drinking milk that's poisoning him.
Mm-hmm.
And you think, my God, you know, what has happened?
Yes, because food is very different now, too. I mean, you've talked about how great food tasted back then.
Oh, it did, yeah.
And
it
now
still
it's
does.
Completely
you just
different.
Have to find it.
Pardon?
It still does. You just have to find it.
Yes. You have to find the food that tastes
right.
good, but in so many different ways, you take a look at us even trying to get organic food so that it's produced in a particular way, and there's resistance to that, and the government tries to change the standards so that people can't even be sure that that's really what they're getting.
Well, they don't know. I think the only way to really be sure of what you're getting is to go out in your backyard and start a garden and grow it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And then you know. But in order to have good food and healthy food, you're going to have animal manure, and that means you're going to have to raise rabbits or something to produce the fertilizer, so
mm-hmm.
you don't have to buy commercial fertilizer.
And all of these things are components in a very different way of looking at the world,
right.
which is a way that we've talked about, too, which is being connected to each other, not in the sense of dependence, but in a sense of helping and trading with
right.
other people. And but knowing that you can handle it, you can take care of yourself.
Well, that's the way everybody, it's going to come down to that anyway, unless you want to wear a chain around your neck and be yanked here and there and told what to do for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a very frightening image.
Well, what other image is there?
Well, the one where we get off the grid and we hold them accountable.
Well, that's true, but I mean, as the way things are going, if people don't wake up, somebody's going to come around. You know those old bulldog collars with the studs in them?
Yes.
They're going to put one around your neck and drag you anywhere they want you to go.
Well, they're actually already doing that in many ways with most people. They simply tell them what to do, and they expect them to do it. And if they don't do it, then there are definite consequences for not doing it.
Exactly.
But you've been on this quest, talking to people. What do people say to you when you tell them what's really going on in America? Do you get people who just simply won't believe it?
Oh, of course. 90% of them don't. And I think they, deep down in their hearts, they know something's wrong. You can see it in their eyes. But they won't admit it, because once you admit something, then you have to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not ready to do anything yet.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you think that may be because they don't see how they could actually do that?
Well, there's no alternative for them, right?
Because it's really hard when people, they look and they don't have the knowledge and they don't know where to get the knowledge. And so what they really need is to be able to go get the knowledge and feel like they do have control and they are in control of their own lives and that they can handle it.
Well, you know, if somebody that has a good-sized yard, you know, not even out of the city, in the city, they have some control. They can raise some of their food.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't take somebody that lives in an apartment, that's lived in an apartment all their life, has never, ever gotten their hands dirty or picked up an earthworm or, you know, there's some things that are just beyond their knowledge. They're beyond their capability of even imagining.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're ingrained. I mean, you get up, you brush your teeth, you go to work. You get off work, you come home, you put a microwave dinner in the oven, and you push the button, and you eat dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Your kids are all at a daycare center, and that's it. You know, there's not much really going on other than just struggling to pay the rent.
That's right, and they're definitely renting. They definitely have to keep their utilities on, or they don't feel like they have any alternative.
Right.
And that goes back to something that started in the first decades of the 20th century, which is the grid.
Yeah.
And most people, they don't think about it. They don't think about the fact that it really hasn't been like that for most Americans through our history. Most Americans were very much connected with how all of these things happened.
Yeah. Well, they had to be because they were part of it.
That's right. And so we've been sort of divorced from that world and actually being able to do for ourselves. So do you think that it sounds to me like you absolutely believe that this has been very intentional on the part of the powers that be.
Well, it has been. You know it has been, and so do I.
Mm-hmm. And what would you recommend the people do about that?
Get a gun.
Okay.
I shouldn't say that, I guess, but that's exactly what it's going to take, I think.
So you think that they should, you know, they should be able to take care of themselves?
Of course.
And they should perhaps learn something about being able to grow their own food.
If they don't, they're going to go awful hungry, and the food that's going to be produced and given to them is going to just keep them drugged up like little zombies.
Mm-hmm.
If that's the way they want to live their life, you know, humdrum, just marching off to somebody else's tune, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to live that way.
No, definitely not. I'm sure that you don't.
No.
When you talk to people when you're on the road, when you talk to, you know, truckers, occasionally you must see the light go on, though, when people
get it. Oh, yeah, a lot of them. And it's so funny, you know, when, like, it's ordinary people, not the educated so-called upper class. It's usually the middle class working man.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll hit a note something that just kind of catalyzes what he's thinking, and that light will go on, and then he'll start asking more questions and more questions and more questions, and then you know that man's going to go home, or that woman is going to go home, get on their computer, or get in a book, or they're going to find out what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
That's when the world starts waking up, one at a time.
And as it wakes up, of course, they're gonna take action.
When this country actually wakes up, and it's not going to be the 20 and 30-year-olds, it's going to be the 40 and older, because they've still got some common sense left.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be, oh, my Lord, I hate to even think what's going to happen, but they're going to take the country back.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping that's what I'm praying for.
Well, I think we all are. But you definitely see that happening. You think that people have the fortitude to go do what they need to do, take the country back.
There's thousands of people out there fighting just as hard as I am for the same thing, maybe in different ways. You know, everybody has their own way. This is just the only way I could think of getting to people.
Mm-hmm.
But there's thousands of people out there working, just trying to get everybody awake.
Yeah, and you're supporting a candidate for president.
Oh, yes, I am.
And who is that candidate?
Mr. Ron Paul.
Tell us a little bit about him and how you found out about him.
Well, I met him a couple of years ago, and I wasn't really impressed, to tell you the truth. When Karen and I went to Washington, we got lost, as most people do, I think, there. And we ran into this older gentleman, you know, we didn't know who he was. And I asked him if he knew how to get to the Fisheries Commission, and he did. And he was kind enough to lead us there, and that was Ron Paul.
Well, how nice of him.
It was. He was the sweetest man. I mean, he was just like meeting your neighbor in the street, and I promptly forgot all about him, you know. He was just a man there. And then here, just a few months ago, I start seeing these things about Ron Paul, and I start looking up his congressional record, and I'm thinking, that's the same guy we, you know, met in Washington.
What an interesting coincidence.
Yeah, but when I started reading his voting records, he's the only one that's had the nerve to stand up and say no to everything that was not right with the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we need. We need to get back to our roots, back to our Constitution, and let's live it. Let's live the way it said we should.
Yeah.
Get rid of the big government, you know? We don't need them. I don't need to support Teddy Kennedy. I don't need to support Hillary Clinton.
Well, no, you don't.
I certainly don't. They've stolen enough to take care of everybody.
Well, they certainly seem to have stolen enough to take care of themselves over this, you know, their several lifetimes.
Or they've stolen more than enough.
Yes. So you met him, you got to know him, you realized he was a real person.
Yes.
And
I've met people that know him personally really well, and I have yet to find anybody that has anything bad to say about him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, of course, people disagree with him. But as far as a person and being honest and forthright and telling you like he thinks it is, I've never met anybody that had anything to say about him that wasn't right on the mark.
Mm-hmm. So he's an honorable man.
He is.
And
he's,
you'd say America needs a man of honor at this point.
He has morals. He was raised with, evidently his parents were honorable people because they raised a son that knew the difference between right and wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's black and there's white. There's no in between. If you're wrong, you're wrong. If you're right, you're right.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to live that way. All this making excuses, like I get so aggravated when people, they'll kill somebody and say, well, I was under the influence of drugs. Well, that doesn't change the fact that you killed somebody.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't change the fact that you killed somebody with your car driving drunk.
That's right.
You know, you're still guilty. So
mm-hmm.
you get punished. There's no excuse for it. There's no excuse for any of that mess.
Yes.
You take your punishment.
Well, I absolutely agree. And, you know, we're kind of getting to the point where we have to close now. But I want to thank you for being with us today. And
could you please
give people your website again?
It's grannywarriors.com, and it's grannynnys.com.
That's fantastic, and I hope you get lots of visits.
Oh, I hope so,
too.
You're
going to be taking off on another trip, right?
Right. We need the support to keep this gas money. If Bush has anything to do with it, we won't be able to afford to go across the road.
He might have you in mind in raising the prices.
Oh, I hope so. I went to see Bush a while back.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being with us.
I appreciate your calling.
God bless.
God bless you.
Bye.
Bye.
And that's our show for today, Friday, March 23rd, 2007. Here at The Spiritual Politician, we're working to help individuals find ideas that make all human organizing tools like government non-impactive on us as people and the world. Freedom in doing the right thing matters in all parts of our lives. On this show, as we do with all our shows, we end by reading the section of the Declaration of Independence that is America's mission statement. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence indeed will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And accordingly, all experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evidences a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. And that's what Thomas Jefferson had to say on the matter. This is Melinda Pillsbury Foster coming to you from BBS Radio. God bless the journey that brings us to freedom. And may God be with you every step of the way. Good night.